Okay, this is our fourth shiur on Kiddushin, and we're going back to the style and approach that you guys have requested, which is great, which is to learn skills. And to do so, again, you cannot approach a sugya and manage the skills without the necessary background. So the background today is actually quite easy. There's one pasuk about sukkah, which I think many of us know anyways. It has one phrase in it, which is critical for our sugya, which is the command to sit in the sukkah in source one is phrased as basukot teshvu shivat yamim, kol ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukot. Right? You should sit, live in the sukkot for 7 days. Kol ha'ezrach. We're going to come back to that phrase and what it may mean. Right? All residents, whatever it means, live in the sukkah. Okay, now, the next two parshiot are very well known to us, right? The part about it that's critical, that for our purposes, is that the first and second parshiot of Shema, 2 and 3 respectively, include the mitzvot of tefillin, study, and mezuzah, but in a different order. In the first parasha, it's study, tefillin, then mezuzah. In the second order, it's tefillin, study, and mezuzah, and that's going to play a role. That's all the biblical background we need for this today. Now, the Mishnah that we began yesterday and then reviewed again today is made up of two parts. And I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the methodology of the study of Mishnah, because we always have to remember the methodology of successfully mastering a Mishnah. We always have to keep in mind that Mishnayot were composed for easy memorization and transmission, and therefore concision was a significant consideration, but so was parallel construction, so that it was easy to see two balanced parts of a Mishnah and to remember them that way. And this Mishnah is a great example of it. If you were to be asked, what is the topic of Mishnah Zion, what would you answer? So think about that, and when we finish the Mishnah, I'd like to hear what you guys think. Part one of the Mishnah, which is I put in blue, highlight, is Kol Mitzvot Ha'av Al HaBen, which we're not going to go into that now, so we'll already jump ahead and say how the Gemara interprets that, means all mitzvot that are on the father to do for his son, meaning parental obligations. Ha'anashim Chayavim V'Nashim Turot. Men are obligated, meaning fathers are obligated, and Nashim Turot, women are exempt, meaning mothers are exempt. On the other hand, kol mitzvot haben al ha'av, flip it, what we would call kibud ha'aveim, echad anashim, echad nashim chayavim, both men and women, boys and girls, are chayav in kibud ha'aveim, in honoring their parents. Okay, good. Now, that's the first part. The second part, kol mitzvat aseh shazman grama, any mitzvat aseh, which is time-bound or time-dependent, Hanashim chayavin v'nashim tirot. Men alone are obligated, not women. And as I pointed out in Shir, there are tons of exceptions to this. Lots of exceptions to this rule. V'chol mitzvat asei shelo azman grama achan anashim v'achad nashim chayavin. Men and women are equally chayav in time-bound mitzvot that are not dependent on time. And again, there's exceptions to that. And then we have another part, which is v'chol mitzvat mitzvat belo taaseh. That's the version of Kaufman. We would read mitzvat lo taaseh. Bein shazman grama, bein shelo azman grama. Any mitzvah lo tase, whether time bound or not. Echad anashim, echad nashim chayavin. Men and women are equally obligated. Women are not allowed to wear shatnez. Women are not allowed to eat a nevela. Women are not allowed to plow with a horse and a donkey together. Chutz bal takif bal tashchit. Both of them having to do with facial hair. And bal titameh lemeitim, an eshet kohen or a bat kohen, is not bound from going to funerals, having contact with the dead. That's the Mishnah. So now, please tell me, what's the topic of the Mishnah? What would you think?
Obligation of mitzvot.
Obligation of mitzvot? Okay, let's see if we can tighten it more. That's a good start.
Who's obligated on a given mitzvah?
Yeah, okay, let's try to come up with a title. What do you think? Take a look at the Mishnah, and the highlighting hopefully will help. You can see that the Mishnah is made up of two parts. The first part is about what? What's the first part, the blue part about?
Parental obligation.
Not parental obligations.
It's about father-son.
Father-son, right. Parents and children. It goes in both directions. And what's the second, the yellow part about?
Time.
Mitzvot aseh. Mitzvot aseh. Right? And then the third part, which is necessary to tail on, is about mitzvot lo taseh. Right? So if you were, but notice what the focal point of the Mishnah is. What is the Mishnah's interest in surveying parent-child relationships, mitzvot aseh, mitzvot lo taseh? What's driving the Mishnah's interest? What's its focal point? Again, part of skills is reading, but part of skills is also constructing the thinking. I want to think behind the Mishnah. What's the Mishnah trying to do?
Differentiating between men and women's obligations.
That's it. It's about men and women. You see, the first part, it's about men and women being either different or the same when it comes to parent-child relations, and men and women being either different or the same when it comes to time-bound mitzvot. The driving unity of this Mishnah is about men versus women, or men and women, right? Okay, good. Now, you'll notice that the Mishnah was constructed in a way that makes it very easy to remember and to memorize. And so therefore, the Tana used the inverse phrase for the first line and the second line. Mitzvata av ala ben, mitzvata ben ala av. And notice that he also used the same pattern where the first line was the point where women and men are differentiated, always to the obligation of the men. And the third line also, you see it? And the second line and the fourth line use the same phrase, echad anashim, echad nashim, chayavim. So you see how easy it is to remember just the balance. But that's not the point of this, but I wanted to point it out because we should already at this point be seeing these things automatically in the Mishnah and imagining what it would be like to transmit this orally and commit it to memory, and how construction of the Mishnah made that easier. Not easy, it's quite a task, but easier. All right, so just want to point that out. Okay, we have another Mishnah in Masachet Brachot that is relevant to our topic, and another Mishnah which is only semantically relevant and not topically. But the one that's topically relevant is in Brachot, in the third parak of Brachot, Nashim va'avadim uktanim, right? So women, avadim here means Eved Kanani, and ktanim means kids who are underage. Turim mikriyat shma umin hatfilin. They're exempt from shma, they're exempt from putting on tefillin. V'chayavim b'tfilah v'mzuzah v'rchat hamazon. But they're obligated to say tefillah, obligated to put a mezuzah on their house, obligated to say berkat hamazon after meal. Now, how is this Mishnah different than our Mishnah?
Well, it ignores men.
What?
It ignores males, adult males.
Okay, good. What else? Good. It only focuses on the odd group. What else is different?
It's simpler. It doesn't have that same thing where it's easy to memorize.
There's no inversion. There's one line, basically, right? But it's right. Not true because there's two parts. There's parts that they're patur from, part that they're chayav from.
It gives specifics.
Right. This does not give rules. This gives examples or specifics. Right? Good. Okay. There's another piece to the puzzle here, is that you have two new groups that were introduced that aren't part of our Mishnah at all. Our Mishnah is only concerned with men who are chayav in everything and women who are chayav in some things. And suddenly we have women and avadim uktanim thrown in. Now, what's curious about this is if you were to ask the question, why? So let's start with Nashim. Why are women exempt from Kriyat Shema and Tefillah and Tefillin?
Positive time bound.
Exactly, which case this Mishnah is superfluous, isn't it? We already have a Mishnah on Kiddushin, just that rule. Okay, good. And now, what's the second half of the rule in Brachot? Chayavin b'tfilah uve mezuzah uve chat hamazon. Now, please stop. Drop tefillah for a minute. Look at mezuzah and berkat hamazon. Tell me, why are women chayavot to say berkat hamazon after they eat a meal and to put a mezuzah in their house?
To show gratitude to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, perhaps.
Yeah, but why are they chayav? We have to think in halachic terms. Why are they chayav?
It's a constant that happens all the time.
It's not time bound. It's very straightforward. Berkat HaMazon is whenever you're in a meal, mezuzah is your house. And tefillah, the truth is also not time bound midoraita. And so, therefore, this whole Mishnah really could be understood as superfluous. That could be our claim. Because every component in this Mishnah is something that's really covered under the rule of our Mishnah and Kiddushin. So you could make the argument that you're right, and the reason that this is here is for Avadim Uktanim. Now, what's curious is, why does a woman not put on tefillin? Why is she not chayiv in tefillin? She can put on tefillin if she wants. Why is she not chayiv in tefillin? Bill, you said it? Because it's man grama, right? Correct.
Yes.
Why do Avadim not put on tefillin? Remember we saw an Eved Kenani, if an Eved Kenani puts on tefillin in the presence of his master, he's free? If the master sees it and doesn't object? Right? Why is an Eved Kenani patur from tefillin? So we say because tefillin is a sign of servitude to God. And an Eved Kenani has a master. Just the same reason Eved Kenani is exempt from Re'iyah, from coming to Yerushalayim for the pilgrimage. Why are Ketanim exempt from tefillin?
They can't control themselves.
Exactly. And tefillin, the reason that, according to the opinion, that tefillin is really a 24-hour mitzvah, 6 days a week, the reason the rabbis made a rule of not wearing tefillin at night was because at night you fall asleep and your body, you can't control yourself. And little kids can't control themselves. And therefore, they can't wear tefillin. Which means that Nashim Avadim Uktanim are exempt from tefillin, each for their own reason, and yet they come together in the group. I just wanted to show you this to you as an example of the mitzvot aseh shazman grama and lo hazman grama. And the Gemara there in Brachot goes through this exact line of questioning. It says, this is superfluous. Why would I have thought that women are chayavot and kriyat shema? They tell me they're not, and tefillin. And then the same thing with, why would you tell me that they're chayavot and tefillah, etc. That should be obvious that they're chayav. Okay. The last Mishnah I want to look at, and then we're going to get in, we have an important Tosefta to look at, and then we're going to get into our sugya. The Mishnah in Eruvin, which again does not hit to us except on a rhetorical level, talks about what food you can use for your Eruv Tchumin. Right? You have to put an Eruv out in Dorton in the middle of nowhere when you want to, you know, when it's less than 2,000 amot from your town and less than 2,000 amot to the town you want to get to, you create your theoretical Shvitah there, and you have to put food. What kind of food can you use? The answer is just about anything. And the Mishnah says, Bakol me'arvin u'mishtatfim. You can make an Eruv. This could be Eruv Tchumin. It could also be Eruv Chatzerot. You can use any food or Shituf Mevuot. Chutz min ha'mayim min ha'melach. The only thing you can't use is water and salt because they're totally inconsequential. Now, based on that rule, what would you answer if somebody would ask you about any other food or drink in the world? Can it be used? Based on that rule, what would you say?
Sure,
because it's
not water, salt.
Everything, and it gave the two exceptions. And the two exceptions should be that. That's it. Okay, good. So just keep that in mind. We're going to come back to it. Now, this Tosefta. And it's always interesting. I just showed my students this morning. We started a new sugya in our Beit Midrash in Kiddushin. It's always a point of interest to see at what point the Tosefta, in some cases, the Tosefta seems to be acting as a commentary on the Mishnah. By the way, I could show you places where the Mishnah is operating as a commentary on the Tosefta. So it's not unidirectional. Right? And that's Shlomo Friedman's famous work. In any case, here it's clear that the Tosefta is acting as a commentary on the Mishnah, because what did our Mishnah say? Mitzvot aseh shazman grama, men are chayav, women are patur. Mitzvot aseh shelo hazman grama, they're both chayav. And how does the Tosefta start? Ezohi mitzvot aseh shazman grama. What are examples of a time-bound mitzvah? It's very clearly a commentary on the Mishnah. And what do they give as examples? Sukkah, lulav, and tefillin. Now, why is Sukkah time-bound?
It's because it's on the 15th of Tishrei.
Yeah. No. It's not. It's on the 15th through the 21st. Okay. 7 days. Is that called time bound?
I would think so.
You would think so. Good. So if that's the case, keep going. Lulav, that's easy. Okay, Lulav is really one day, daytime. But what's Tfilin? What makes Tfilin time bound?
I don't know, because you said it's 24 hours or not, but your waking hours.
I said, so if you wear what it, I said is that there's a machloket among the Tanaim, whether tefillin really are noheg during the day, and we just don't do it because we might fall asleep. I mean, during night, that tefillin are noheg really 24 hours, just not Shabbat, and we don't wear it at night because we're afraid to fall asleep, or really midoraita, they're not noheg at night. That's a machloket. So what position does our Tosefta maybe take? And that raises the question, if tefillin really are 6 times 24, 24 hours a day for 6 days, then women should be chayav, right? Or are you going to say that because it's only 6 days and not 7 days, they're patur? Would you call something time-bound if it's every day of the week, not Shabbat? You understand the difficulty?
Yes.
Defining something as time-bound is not a simple thing. The most extreme example of time-bound is something that must be done during a very narrow window of time. Which you could say, since I can't, I have control of my time, whatever it might be, I can't commit to it. But something that has such a large window, kind of hard. All right? So you argued, Bill, that Sukkah is time-bound because it's only 7 days, even though it's 24 times 7. It's a mitzvah that lasts for 168 straight hours. You're still calling it time-bound. You guys understand why that's not so simple? Does anybody see why calling Sukkah time-bound is kind of not so simple?
Yeah.
Okay. And now tefillin, we're calling time-bound because it's no egg, if it's no egg, day and night, just not Shabbat and Yom Tov and Chagim. You understand that you're biting it, you're ripping this thing on both sides. So just keep it in mind. I want to point out along the way, because even though I want to get to the technical skills, I want to point out along the way some of the logical challenges that appear here. And what's interesting about it is this is a very well-known sugya. These are terms that everybody's familiar with. Zman grama, etc. Women are exempt. Take it apart a little bit and think. It's not so easy. Now, Ezui mitzvata se shelo azman grama. Still on the first line of the Tosefta. I'm going to Aveda. What's Aveda? What's Aveda? The end of the first line of the Tosefta.
Oh, lost object.
Right. So you have to return a lost object, whether you're man or woman. It's not time bound, right? Shiluach haken. What's Shiluach haken?
The bird's nest.
Sending away the mother bird if you want to keep the zet. Ma'akeh, which is what?
Fits on a roof.
Putting a parapet on your roof. Vitzitzit. Oops, look at that. Tzitzit is called mitzvah taseh, shelo azman grama, and women are chayiv. I'm not making it right there in the Tosefta. Huh. Now, Rabbi Shimon Poter, and this is going to give us an insight. Rabbi Shimon Poter tanashim minat tzitzit. He says women are exempt from tzitzit. Don't say they can't wear it, of course not. He says they're exempt. Now, in Masechta Menachot, Rabbi Shimon and Chachamim duke it out, and what it has to do with the issue of whether tzitzit is something you have to put on clothes you wear at night. And what phrase in the Torah might tell you that tzitzit are not noeg at night?
Uritemoto.
To make it sound like it's a daytime mitzvah. Is it a daytime mitzvah? Or is it only on clothes that are typically worn during the day? Or is Uri'ita Moto, like Chachamim here say, there to exempt a blind person from tzitzit? And nothing to do with daytime. In which case, women are chayavot in tzitzit because it's day and night. Just trying to point out to you, things are not as simple as it seems. Now, notice the next Tosefta. Ezu mitzvata ben alav. You understand the relationship between the Tosefta and the Mishnah? I color-coded them. The Mishnah says mitzvot between parents and children, etc., and then mitzvot asay. And the Tosefta says, what's an example of asay with time, asay without time? Now, what's an example of mitzvot haben Allah? Meaning, and they're reading the language of the Mishnah the opposite. Sorry, they're reading it correct, the same way. Eiz mitzvot haben Allah, meaning mitzvot the children have to do for their parents. And what are mitzvot the parents have to do for their children? Good, so let's take a look at it. What is it that children have to do for their parents? Ma'achil, you have to feed them. Mashkeh, give them to drink. Molbish, put their clothes on them. We're talking about old parents who need help. I mean, typically. U'mechaseh, motzi, u'machnis, take them outside, bring them back in. Marchitz, panav, yadav raglav, wash them. Right? Echad ha'ish v'echad ha'isha. Right? Etc. Ezo mitzvata avala ben. What is it that the father has to do for son? Lemulo, remember we saw this already in the Gemara. Relief toto, you have to do brit milah, pidyon haben, lamdo Torah, teach him Torah, do umanut, teach him a trade, asio isha, etc., and it goes on. All right, now we could spend the whole session on this Tosefta. There's tons of stuff here. We're not going to do it, but I want you to see it and take it home, print it out, and look at it. It's fairly straightforward, and it's great. But let's get to our sugya, because this is where the skills kick in, and you can see again, I've used the orange to show formula words in the Shakla Vitaryan. Okay. We'll get to this in about 3 days in the Daf, but this is the Gemara on Mitzvata Seishas Mangrama. Right? The Gemara asks, Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara doesn't ask, it quotes the Tosefta. Ezo Mitzvata Seishas Mangrama, Suka Vilulav. Now notice it has a different version than our Tosefta. Shofar Vitzitzit Utfilin. You see what happened? In our Tosefta, we had Sukkah, Lulav, and Tfilin as Zman Grama. And Tzitzis was Lo Zman Grama, and women have to wear it. In this Braita, Sukkah, Lulav, Shofar, which was left out before, Tzitzit, Utfilin are all Zman Grama, and women are exempt, which is what we're accustomed to. An interesting thing, just seasonal, that we're all familiar with, and a friend of mine rails about this every year, is that women go out of their way like crazy to hear shofar in Rosh Hashanah, including having people walk long distances to their house that they can't get out to blow shofar for them, and they're exempt from shofar, but they don't daven, which they're chayiv to do. Everybody's chayiv to daven every day. That's clear. In any case, all right. Veiz mitzvata say shalo azman grama, mezuzah, ma'akeh, aveda, v'shiluach hakeh. Notice the same examples as we saw in the Tosefta. Now, that's the Braita. Now let's get into it. Uklalahu? This is a challenge. What does the word klal mean? What's a klal?
Principle.
Okay, in this case, a general rule. Right?
Or the Knesset would call it a basic law.
No, not at all.
Klal, no, it's easy. I'm being facetious. I'm sorry.
Means
it's general principle.
A general rule, meaning that it is that you can follow it safely. In other words, if it says kol, then that's the way it goes. Hare, here's the exceptions. Matzah, are women chayiv in matzah? Meaning at the Seder.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Midoraita. Simcha is the mitzvah on the regel to rejoice. Mm-hmm. And hakel, which is every 7 years to come to the mikdash and hear the Torah read. Women are chayavot in those mitzvot, even though they are time-bound mitzvot asei. To mitzvot asei shazman grama v'nashim chayavot v'tu is just like in English, number two, and more, and beyond. And watch this, very Talmud Torah. What's Talmud Torah mean?
To learn.
The mitzvah of learning. Priya urvia, which is?
Babies.
Having kids. Upidyon haben, redeeming the firstborn son. Are those time-bound or not?
Upidyon haben is.
The, right.
Why?
Don't you have 30 days to do it?
You have to make sure. But after that, there's no, you do it at night, during the day, do it you know, you do it after 50 days, 40, 60 days. You have to wait 30 days to make sure he's alive. But it's still not time-bound. Right? Meaning women are exempt even though it's not time-bound. Which means our Mishnah is misleading us. And this is what I want to point to. What's the language of the Mishnah? Kol mitzvata avala ben. Women are, sorry, kol mitzvata seshon grama. All time-bound mitzvot, women are exempt. All time, not time-bound mitzvot, women are chayav. And here we have exceptions to both rules. And what further complicates it is the end of our Mishnah says, women are chayavot in all lotaseis except, which means we assume our Mishnah is giving us a comprehensive list and marking the three exceptions. Now watch what happens here. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now remember, Rabbi Yochanan is very likely the single most important character in the whole Talmud Bavli, even though he was never in Bavel. You find Rabbi Yochanan quoted left, right, and center. And here's a quote from Rabbi Yochanan that we hear several times. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Ein lemedin min ha-klalot. You cannot infer or learn from klalot. What does klalot mean? A general statement. Meaning when you say kol. Right? You can't learn from something that says kol. Va'afilu bimkom shenamar bo chutz. Chutz should be in quotes. Meaning, if a rule is presented, and the rule not only that, but spells out several exceptions, you still can't assume that everything that fits in the rule goes with it. Which, by the way, makes the rule very unhelpful. To say, kol mitzvata seh shazman grama u'ashim turot, but it's not true. And that means that when I have a mitzvata seh shazman grama, I have to ask the question, are women chayavot or not? Maybe they are. Maybe it's like matzah. It's time-bound, but they have to do it. And even in a place where it spells out the exceptions might, there might be other exceptions. Now, how do I know that rule? Where did Rabbi Yochanan get that from? Ditnan. And this is why I brought in the Mishnah in Eruvin. Bakol me'arvinu mishtatfin. You can use any food for an Eruv. Chutz min amayim u'melach. What are the only two exceptions?
Water and salt.
Water and salt. They're like inconsequential. The two leikas and no other exceptions. Vayika kmehinu pitriot. In other words, mushrooms, okay, some other fungus. You can't use them for an Eruv, which means that the Mishnah said you can use everything for an Eruv except A and B. And guess what? C and D are also out. Ella, what's the rule? Ein lemedin min haklalot vafilu makom sheneva rechutz. So this is where Yochanan got the rule from. He took a look at the Mishnah and Eruv, and what did he say? I understand that the composition of the Mishnah, even when it gives a rule, and even when it spells out the exceptions to the rule, there may be other exceptions, which, of course, like I said, makes it less helpful. But it is what it is. Okay. And now I want to get to the real kishkas here. Mitzvat aseh shazman grama nashim p'turot. That's the rule. The rule is, other exceptions, but the broad rule is, women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. I just want to put a note in here, an important statement of Rabbeinu Tam and Sefer Yashar, which is that this only applies to mitzvot d'oraita. Mitzvot d'orabanan aren't impacted by this rule. So I know you should have turned around and asked, how come women have to light candles for Shabbat? It's time-bound, super time-bound, 18 minutes, right? Very time-bound. And yet the chayav, it's irrelevant because of d'orabanan. The rule doesn't touch it. Okay, now, what is always a riding interest of the Gemara? Because remember, the Mishnah is apodictic. The Mishnah is presented in an apodictic form, meaning it presents the law and it does not give you the reasoning behind it. It's not the Mishnah's job. What is a driving interest of the Gemara at all times?
To try to get to a conclusion on the halacha.
That's one definite thing, especially if there's a machloket. But as a starting point, when the Gemara looks at a a rule in the Mishnah. I mean, the rule is presented apodictically, without source, without reasoning behind it. What is an overwhelming, common, frequent, whatever you want to say, interest of the Gemara?
To try and discern the basis.
What's the basis? Exactly. What's the source? And what's the Shakla Vatarya word among several that we use to say, where does this come from? It's right there in orange.
Oh.
You haven't heard of RCCS? Yes. Wow. Okay, call it the Cancer Society.
Okay, what's the word? The word is? Yeah, the word is?
What?
Manalan. Everybody see it? Right there. Manalan. Manalan is a compound of Manalan, from where to us. Meaning, where does this come to us? What is the source of this law? Why are women exempt from time-bound mitzvot as a general rule, with exceptions? And the Gemara answers, gamar mitzvilin. Now, important to note, what does the word ligmor mean?
To learn from.
Okay, so in Hebrew, what does ligmor mean?
To finish.
To finish, right? But ligmor in Mishnaic Hebrew, kind of Amoraic Hebrew, actually means to learn or to read, right? Like the bracha that the Sfardim say on Hallel is ligmor ta Hallel. It doesn't mean the completed. They're reading the Hallel. And that's why Gemara is Gemara. So now, gamar mitzvilin. In other words, we learned this rule from tefillin. Okay? Now that's going to immediately, and I want you to think about it now, because it's part of the skill. What's difficult about that answer? What needs to be demonstrated to make that answer work? We learn it from tefillin. So what two things would have to be demonstrated to make that work?
In the passage and tefillin, it has to say or allude to that at least.
Has to allude to what?
Tefillin has to be one grump.
To the...
Sure. No, what?
Tefillin has to be time-dependent.
So the first thing you have to prove is that tefillin is time-dependent. Okay. What else do you have to prove to make this work?
That women are exempt.
I understand. Okay.
That tefillin is a good analogy.
A good model.
Yeah.
Right. In other words, the first question you're going to ask is, who says women are exempt from tefillin? Two, who says that tefillin is zman grama? And three, even if that's the case, who says that tefillin is the source that we should get stuff from? Why is tefillin the model? The Gemara is going to go through all that. I want you to anticipate it. That's what you have to anticipate when you're looking at a sugya. So now here's how it works. Gamar mitzvilin. Now, how do you translate the word? We're getting into assembly language. How do you translate the word ma in a Shakla Vatarya formula? The word ma, how is ma translated in a Shakla Vatarya formula? The answer is, Bill?
It depends
if it's an analogy or a Kal Vachomer. If it's an analogy, then how do you want to translate ma? How do you start every analogy in English?
Just as,
and then the other half is going to be similarly. In the case of a Kal Vachomer, how would you translate? How's the beginning of a Kal Vachomer in English?
If
that's the case, then certainly that's the case. Now, here's the clue. You see the word ma? What's the next orange word on the page?
And then she had something
off.
Right. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to mute some folks because there's some ambient noise. All right, ma is followed by af. Af means so too. So how do I translate ma if af is so too? How do I translate ma? If af is similarly, how do I translate the first half? Or I'll say it differently. Af indicates it's an analogy. If it's an analogy, how do I translate ma?
Just as, right?
Just as tefillin, women are exempt. Af kol mitzvot aseh shel zman grama nashim turot. That's the very simple form of this analogy. Just like women are exempt from tefillin, women are exempt from all mitzvot aseh shehazman grama. All right? Now, one of the questions we asked was, who says women are exempt from tefillin? The other question we asked is, who says tefillin is man grama? All right, so let's start with the first one. Utfilin gamarla mi Talmud Torah. What does that mean? Again, these are all formula words that we've dealt with. Tfilin gamarla mi Talmud Torah. What does gamar mean in this, just as we used it above?
Is learned from,
right? Utfilin gamarla mi Talmud Torah. How do we know that women are exempt from tefillin? Because they're exempt from what?
Just as they are exempt from Talmud Torah.
Sorry, they're exempt from tefillin, which means, by the way, now there's another question that's got to be kicking in the back of our heads, which is, why are you using Talmud Torah to inform tefillin? In other words, women are exempt from Talmud Torah, therefore they're exempt from tefillin. What's the connection between the two? And then why is tefillin the model for everything? You understand there's some huge questions here. Mm-hmm. Now, watch the analogy again. Ma Talmud Torah Nashim Pturot, af tefillin Nashim Pturot. You see the formula? This is a very helpful thing because you can see the formula several times of an analogy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, Benakish Tfilin Limezuzah. Now, I want to remind you, it's an important rule, that whenever you see a verb with a prefix of a nun or a lamed in Aramaic, it's best translated as let it be. Not Paul McCartney, let it be, meaning whatever that verb is, let it be that. And it's a question, which is a way of saying, why isn't it that? Now explain. V'nakish tefillin l'mezuzah, which literally means, let us compare tefillin not to Talmud Torah, but to mezuzah. But what it's really saying is, why aren't we comparing tefillin to mezuzah? Now, are women obligated to put a mezuzah up? Yes. So if we compare tefillin to mezuzah, we'll say, just like women have to put up a mezuzah, they also have to wear tefillin. And that will combust everything that we have. Correct? In other words, our question is, why are we using Talmud Torah as the model to inform tefillin? Use mezuzah as the model to inform tefillin. Now, why are these things connected? Why are tefillin, learning, and mezuzah connected? This goes back to page one. What did you see on page one? I'll show it to you again. Right there, sources 2 and 3. What do you see there? Tefillin, mezuzah, Talmud Torah. What do you see? Look for the three different colors. Yeah? What do you see? What do you see? The yellow is
Torah.
The green is tefillin, and the blue is mezuzah, right?
Right.
So these three mitzvot are presented side by side in Ve'ahavta and side by side in the second paragraph. So we say, aha, there must be some relationship between them. So he said, just like women are exempt from Talmud Torah, they're exempt from tefillin. Why don't you compare tefillin to mezuzah? By the way, which if I had those three in a box, which two would I see, find more similar? Learning, tefillin, and mezuzah. Which two would I group together and the other one would be the odd man out?
Literally in a box.
So it's supposed to be together. They're both written. They're both, you know, they're both displayed. Talmud Torah is learning. It's a different thing. And we're saying, no, we're going to use Talmud Torah as the model. And from Talmud Torah that women are exempt from, that we established, remember, today in the daf, so women are also exempt from tefillin. So now we ask, v'nakish, let us compare by juxtaposition, tefillin the mezuzah, which is a way of saying, why don't you? And the answer they give is tefillin the Talmud Torah itkish, meaning tefillin is next to Talmud Torah, bein beparsha rishona, bein beparsha shnia. Look at it again. What color is tefillin?
Green.
Green. What color is Tomatara?
Yellow.
Yellow. What color is Mezuzah?
Blue.
Blue. What's the order in the first parsha, the one we say right after the word Shema, Ve'ahavta? What's the order? Right here. What's the order?
Learning, tefillin.
Learning, then tefillin, then the mezuzah. What's the order in the second paragraph?
Tefillin.
Tefillin, learning, mezuzah. So which two are always next to each other?
Oh. Learning and
learning and tefillin are always next to each other. Mezuzah is always at the end.
Oh.
And so the Gemara gives the answer, which is tefillin, the Talmud Torah, eat kish ben parsha rishon ben parsha shniya. Tefillin is next to learning in both the parshiot. Tefillin, the mezuzah, parsha shniya lo kish. In the second parsha, tefillin is not next to mezuzah. It's broken up by Talmud Torah. Okay. This is a very technical answer to a very big question. Because clearly they knew what the end result was. They're not trying to figure out what to do. They're trying to figure out how do we get to where we know we had to get to. Okay, this is Google Maps. Google Maps, you start by putting a destination in, and then you got three routes, and you decide which way to go. You don't wonder where you're going to get to.
Why?
Right? We know here where we need to get to. Okay, so now. The Nakish Mezuzah, the Talmud Torah. Well, as long as you're doing that, as long as you're saying that the mitzvot that are juxtaposed in those parshiot should inform each other, then why don't you compare mezuzah to learning? After all, mezuzah is next to learning in the second parsha. And then say women are exempt from all three of them. They're exempt from tefillin, from learning, and from mezuzah. And listen to the interesting answer, because we seem to be operating in a very technical fashion now. And then suddenly we expand. Lo salkadata. Now, that's a term I put in orange because it is a technical term that's used all the time in Shakla Vitaria. We're going to come back to it in a minute after we read the line to see what it means and how it operates. Lo salkadaitach. For right now, we'll just say it means don't think so. Dichtiv, l'man yirbuim echem. Where is that line, l'man yirbuim echem? When did we say that?
Mishma.
Right, at the end of the second paragraph, right after mezuzah. Put up mezuzah, that you should have a long life. Now, even though l'man yirbuim echem seems to be about the whole parsha, loving God and doing all the mitzvot, being careful not to do avodah zarah, you'll have a long life. The Gemara is reading it very narrowly. That right after mezuzah, it says you should have a long life. Gavri ba'yichai, nashilo ba'yichai, only men have to live a long life. Women don't want to live a long life. You understand what we've gone? We've gone from the overly technical of juxtaposition. Here it's juxtaposed twice, and this one's only juxtaposed once, to a much broader approach, which is, well, we can't exempt women from mezuzah, because regarding mezuzah, it says you'll live a long life, and women also want to live a long life. Do you understand how we've gone into a whole different realm with this? Okay. So what we've done up until this point, and the formulas that we have focused on, are the formulas of analogy, and then the last formula phrase, lo salka datach, which is very popular, very frequent, which we translate as don't think so, literally means something a little different. The literal translation of salka datach means it went up in your mind.
Lihistalik.
What?
Lihistalik.
Not the way we use lihistalik. The way we use lihistalik is to leave. Here, salka in Aramaic means to go up. So salka adatach, in proper Aramaic to be an aleph before the word adatach, salka adatach means it went up in your head, meaning it occurred to you. Lo salka adatach means don't think that. Don't let that occur to you, because it's wrong. And then you got to explain why. Right? So there we go. Now, what we're going to see is that the rule, this is not an exception to the rule, but it's a problem with the rule. What's the first example given everywhere about Zman Grama? Sukkah. We said Sukkah Lulav and Tfilin in the Tosefta and ours, Sukkah Lulav Shofar, Tzitzis and Tfilin. Sukkah is the first example. All right. Take a look at this. Vahare Sukkah. All right. And again, I want to focus on some of the new terms and utilize some of the old terms that we've done. Now, we spent a session on a tsrichuta, on a justification argument, and the mechanics of a justification argument. We're going to see that now. Vahare sukkah. Now, are women exempt or obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah?
We obligate them.
What?
We obligate them.
Sukkah? Are women chayab or patur from sukkah?
No women.
Women are exempt from sukkah. We saw that as the example in Tosefta. What's a mitzvah tasejan grama? Sukkah. Okay. The mitzvah tasejas man grama, right? And women are exempt. So far, that's good. But here's the problem. Tichtiva sukote shvu shivat yamim. Exactly like Bill said. The very fact that it's only 7 days makes it zman grama. It's difficult. Now, I want to show you a new Shakla Vitaria phrase. And again, I put in orange because these are formulae, so they can appear anywhere. Ta'ama. And what does the word ta'ama mean on its own? It's a vital word in the Bavli. What is ta'ama?
The reason.
Reason. My ta'ama, what's the reason? Ta'ama didi, ta'ama didach. My reason, your reason. Ta'ama, reason. Now, in this kind of an argument, the way it works is the only reason that you're saying that is because of this consideration. Without that consideration, I would have said differently. Now, that sounds quite abstract, so let's make it real. Ta'ama dechatav rachmana ha'ezrach. Remember the pasuk we saw up here about sukkah? For source number one. Sukkot teshvu shivat yamim, live in the sukkah for 7 days. Kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu ha'sukkot. All the ezrachim live in a sukkah. Now watch this. Ta'ama dechatav rachmana ha'ezrach. Meaning, why do I exempt women from the sukkah? Because it says ha'ezrach lehotzi et hanashim. Somehow that exempts women. In other words, I'm understanding that if sukkah didn't have this special word, I would have obligated women. But it had a special word that said women are exempt. Halav hachi nashim chayavot. Meaning, if it weren't for that, women would be chayav. Now let me show you how this argument works, because it's all in the abstract. And it's all in the theoretical. Not the abstract, it's all in the theoretical. Remember, women are exempt from sukkah. So if all you're interested in is the practicum, this is not the shear for you. But what we're trying to figure out is, if sukkah, which is zman grama, and women are exempt from all zman grama, then I don't need a special verse to exempt women from sukkah. It's the part of the general rubric. So why does the Torah say, kol ha'ezrach b'Yisrael, that the rabbis understand is there to exempt women? Do you understand the problem? Women should already be exempted. And the way the phrase works is, ta'ama dechatav rachmana ha'ezrach. The only reason you exempted them was because that extra word, ha'ezrach, which we understand, lo tziyat ha'nashim, exempts women. Halav hach, if it weren't for that, nashim chayavot, women would be obligated. How can they be obligated? It's time bound. So watch who comes to the rescue. Who comes to the rescue?
Baye
and Rava. Isn't that nice? Right? Teaming up. Amar Baye. So Baye justifies it. Now, justifying means if I have an instance that falls under a rule, I don't need a special exemption. It's already been discarded, right? Women are already out of the sukkah because of time bound. I don't need Ezrach to cut them out of the sukkah. Abaye says, yes, I do. Why? Itztarich. What does itztarich mean?
It's necessary.
Very good. It's necessary. This is the beginning of a tzrichuta argument. Now, what the Gemara does, a little bit of a shortcut, I'll show you. Itztarich. Salka datach amena. Okay? What does that mean? What does salka datach mean?
I would have thought.
It would have occurred to my mind. Amena. Amena means to say. That word means to speak, to say. Salka data chamena means it would have occurred to me to say, or it would have occurred to you to say, ho'il. Now, what does ho'il mean? Ho'il means since. But this is the reasoning I would have used. And what's vital here is that anytime you're involved in a justification argument, that's tzrichuta, whether it's of an extra phrase in a Mishnah or an extra phrase in the Torah or whatever it may be, you're operating in the purely hypothetical area, which is, it had not said that, here's the mistake I would have made. But it does say that, so I won't make that mistake. So you have to imagine a world that's not there. Time permitting, remind me, I'll tell you a story about that that'll highlight it. Itztarich, salka data chamein, I would have thought, ho'il dichtiv basukot teshvu. The Torah says you have to live in a sukkah. What does live in a sukkah mean? What are you obligated to do in a sukkah? What do we do in a sukkah?
Eat, sleep,
drink, sleep, learn,
eat,
hang out.
To eat.
What?
To eat.
But all besides that, we sleep there, we hang out there. The sukkah is our dwelling for all 7 days. And the phrase that the Amoraim made up for that was Teshvu Ka'en Taduru. You live in the sukkah like you live in the house. Right?
Yeah.
So now, remember our ma'anaf? Here we go again. Ma dira ish v'ishto. What happens when you're in your house? You're in your house with your wife. Af sukkah ish v'ishto. Similarly, in your sukkah, you're in your wife. So perhaps women, I might have thought women are chayavot. In other words, sukkah might be an exception to the rule of time-bound mitzvot, because sukkah is, shall we call it, a family affair. And sukkah is supposed to be about transplanting your house to the outside. So maybe your wife is part of that also. And therefore, I need Hazrach to say women are exempt. All right? Parenthetically, we have the same problem with Simcha. Are women obligated to go to Yerushalayim on the regular to rejoice? Or are men obligated to elate them? The Gemara actually gets to a little further down. Rav has a different way of justifying Sukkah. Itztarich, salka data chamena. Again, it's important to get used to these phrases. It would have occurred to you to say, meaning without Ha'ezrach, I would have made Sukkah an exception and obligated women as follows. Let me ask you a question. What is our obligation vis-a-vis Sukkah? What was it? To build it, and then what do we have to do?
Dwell in it.
What? We have to live in it for 7 days. Are all 7 days of equal obligation?
Yes.
Okay. So not exactly, because the first night there's an added obligation. For instance, if the weather's really, really bad, we don't have this in LA too much, but back east it rains, whatever. You're exempt from just Sukkah. But on the first night,
make kiddush
until perhaps very late to see if it clears up, so we can go out to the sukkah, make kiddush, and have a kezayit of bread. There's a special obligation deoraita to have a kezayit of bread in the sukkah the first night, which we learn from a gzeirah shavah of chamishasar, the 15th of Tishrei, chamishasar, the 15th of Nisan. Just like you have to eat a piece of matzah. The rest of Pesach, you don't want to eat matzah, don't eat matzah, just can't have chametz. But the first night you have to eat matzah. Similarly, the rest of the week, you don't want to eat in the sukkah, just don't eat. But you have to eat on the first night in the sukkah. And so therefore, I would have thought, Neilav chamishasar, chamishasar, michaga matzot. I might have made that zerah shava. Malala nashim chayavot, afkan nashim chayavot. Are women obligated in matzah? Darn tootin. So I would have thought, similarly, they're obligated in sukkah, at least for that first night. Sricha. Now notice what the Gemara did, a shortcut. It didn't put a tzricha after Abaye's argument, because it combined Abaye and Rava. But they're both doing tzrichuta arguments, where they're saying, this is why I would have thought that that women are obligated in sukkah, and the Torah had to put an extra word to exempt them, because sukkah is special circumstances. Now what the Gemara goes on, and we're going to see this in our daf shir, is all sorts of other difficulties with the inference from tefillin exempting women from time-bound mitzvot. And then we take a look at time-bound mitzvot that women are chayav in and say, why isn't that the model? Why isn't Hakel the model? Right? Right? By the way, women are chayavot in mora'a va'em. Mora'a va'em is, sorry, I take it back. That's not Zman Grama. Women are chayavot, though, in matzah, as we saw, and simcha, perhaps. Several other mitzvot aseh shazman grama. What the Gemara then goes on is another piece of the puzzle, which is, and we might do this next week also. I have to ask you a quick question about next week and tell you the story. But we might do this next week also because it's a great sugya to practice our skills on. And as you can see, there's a lot of orange on the page. And so I think it may be worthwhile. And it's also a very central sugya in an area that we're very, very familiar with. And then there's a really cool Yerushalmi to look at. So what we've seen over the past 55 minutes is we started by taking a look at the relevant psukim, and I talked about how when studying a sugya, the first thing you got to do is get your basics down. You got to get all relevant passages in Tanakh and all relevant mishnayot and brightot that you can collect and make sure you understand them. And then you go into the Gemara, and then remember that in the Gemara itself, we're going to have a discussion about where something comes from. We're going to have an expansion from the Tosefta to give us examples. In this case, we will check the rule. Is the rule really an ironclad rule? But the main interest in our sugya is where does it come from? And we're not even halfway through that discussion at this point in the Gemara. What we saw was that in that discussion, we saw that tefillin was the model, and tefillin was daisy chained to Talmud Torah. And Talmud Torah, we started with a premise that women are exempt from Talmud Torah. Therefore, they're exempt from tefillin because tefillin is compared to Talmud Torah. And therefore, tefillin becomes the model. We solved one problem and we didn't solve the other problem yet. The problem we did solve is that why are women exempt from Talmud Torah, from tefillin? And why tefillin is modeled after Talmud Torah? What we didn't get to is why is tefillin the model? Why don't we make matzah the model? In other words, why is tefillin the model for all the mitzvot that guides the rule that if it's time-bound, women are exempt, right? And that's what we'll have to explore a little bit more next week. Okay, I just want to quickly tell you this story because I have 2 minutes, all right? Story happened to me many, many years ago. And I've shared it with you a couple of times, but don't know if you remember it. In any case, many, many years ago in a galaxy far, far away, I was taking a course in computer programming. Believe it or not, it was so long ago that we actually used punch cards, right? So, right, and I got there with my little Flintstones car. It was very cute. Anyhow, so the way it worked is that it was a six-month course. The first month was an intro, and the whole group was there. The second month was an ancient language. It's called RPG. It was out there with Sanskrit, and it was taught by an Iraqi Jew. He and I were the only two Jews in the class. An Iraqi Jew who was about 4 feet tall, delightful guy. I used to hang out with him all the time because we would talk Ivrit together. And then he would direct which students went to programming and which students went to operations. And programming meant you learned how to write languages and you learned how to systems and you could get a decent paying job and then move up. And operations meant you learned how to press buttons and like that. So one time, I remember this like yesterday, and this is a long time ago. I was hanging out with him during lunch, and I said to him in Hebrew, tell me, have you seen, over all the years you've been doing this, have you seen a pattern of which students go to programming and which students go to operations? And he said something as wild. He said, the Jews and the Asians all go to programming. And then he said, and the Goyim go to operations, which I thought was funny because the Asians are also Goyim. And I asked him, why do you think that is? And he said that the Jews and the Asians come from a religious tradition. So I looked at him and said, what do you mean? All these goyim I see around here, they all wear crosses, they're religious people. He says, no, you don't understand. We come from a religious intellectual tradition. I said, what do you mean? He said, I want you to think about how often during the day you use your imagination. And you imagine things that aren't in front of you. So I stopped and thought. I said, well, every time I daven, I'm in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I got a picture of some ox that I've never been in, falling into a cistern I've never seen, as an example. I have to picture a Kohen that I've never really seen, bringing a Korban to Beit HaMikdash. I'm always imagining stuff, right? We, in our study, we're imagining, theoretically, if it didn't say this, what would I have understood? And he looked at me and said, that's what programming is. Programming a computer is basically moving bits around that you'll never see in your life and being able to imagine them. And so, a very interesting take. Not sure I agree with him, but it's a very interesting insight into the great legacy that we have in our learning. Okay, one question I want to ask you, you can weigh in on this either an email or whatever, is next week, this time won't work, it's going to be Tzom Gedalia. We could meet on Tuesday night if you want, at the same time, like something like 5:30. Just send me an email, let me know. And then we'll meet. We'll have a dive on Tuesday. We'll do part two of this.
Tuesday, okay. I'll be on an airplane.
Okay. I mean, so everybody just let me know by email. Okay. Talk to you later. Tivav Chatima Tovah, everybody. Hopefully I'll see you guys.